feel like I was learning something new, but I was being reminded of something that I already knew. And that's when I started, you know, distinguishing between acquired knowledge and the truth that gets awakened by a sentence or a scene or a quote. I don't know.
Welcome, welcome. That was the beautiful sound of Mr. Roman, my friend Ricardo, speaking some of his truth in this most incredible conversation that we've had today. And this is my first ever public podcast. I'm sharing this with you in the hopes of spreading more of what this world needs, which is just open-hearted connection, communication, vulnerability, compassion, and fun. So yes, please enjoy this incredible talk with my lovely friend, Roman. He's an incredible songwriter, a fellow lyrical nomad, a traveler, a brother, just a wonderful human being who has inspired me greatly with his sensitivity and his ability to communicate with clarity. Basically, what this is just a conversation between two friends and me having the opportunity to ask some of the questions I already know the answers to, but some questions I've just been curious about him, and just as a way to introduce you to someone who is very precious in my world and who I think brings wonderful insight to certain of the things that we experience in the world. And so that's it. Please enjoy my conversation and the songs of the wonderful Roman. Yes, welcome to podcast number two. I don't even have a name for this podcast yet, and I will see if it works with video. If it doesn't, then we'll just do audio. I mean, in terms of us talking now, we might, but those listening will only hear audio. So welcome to anyone who's listening to this right now. I assume it's going to be mainly my patrons initially, and then I'll share it out to the rest of the world. So if you are the rest of the world, then welcome to this experience. I have as my guest today, this amazing human being, Ricardo, also known as Roman, all the way from Italia, from Roma.
Ciao.
And we've been good friends and brothers for, oh man, a good few years now. It must be since, well, like 3 or 4, feels like it's been an eternity, but it's only been about 4 years or so, I think.
It's been really long, but we met, 2013.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, and we've just decided, like, I've really kind of, this whole podcast thing is new to me. I love podcasts. I listen to them a lot. And I really wanted to start having conversations with cool, fun people I care about, and to just offer some insight into what goes through our minds and worlds and everything. So, I'd be interested, like, just from your side, how did, you know, what is your memory of our meeting? I mean, how, you know, I obviously know what my perception of that was, but how did that happen for you as far as it goes?
I remember sitting at the venue where you were hosting the open mic in Spiral, this lovely little vegan cafe. And I'd asked around and said, yes, come at 6 or 7. And then the host, Nate Mangard, is going to come and you can write down your name for the list. And I remember that day you were late and I showed up way too early. So I've been waiting for a long time. And so I remember the first experience was like, why is this guy late? I really want to. And then you came and you were doing all your things for the show. But then as soon as the show started, I got a better idea of who you were. And I was like, yeah, I think we could probably be friends.
Yeah, that's the long and short of it. So I'm curious. I mean, one of the things that I've always been so interested about is your sort of capacity for communication and like how well you speak. Especially as someone who's from Italy and where English isn't your first language, but like what, I guess in a deep way, not just in terms of being able to speak another language, but more the depth of your questioning. Like what is it that inspired you growing up where you were? Like what brought you to the place of wanting to communicate with such clarity in both your words and in your songs? Like what's a bit of that history?
I think it has to do with my dad because he's an amazing public speaker in Italian mostly, and he's a doctor, but he's also a preacher in the little church where I was born and raised. And so I think a little bit I got from him the easiness of talking or the ability to communicate. And then growing up, because it was a little church. Until I drifted away from that institution, everyone was telling me you're going to be a great preacher like your dad. It was this idea of, you know, having to speak to people, but I used to be really shy actually. Up up until my first year of college, I remember when I when on my first day of university, I walked into a room with 100 chairs, and there were about 60 people sitting on the left, and I was the only one sitting on the right. I still had it, but I wasn't confident or comfortable enough to open up. And then I think it's been a mix of having that kind of quality or that potential, and then music. Like, I had to mix the two. Also, when I started performing, remember, I used to sing really, I was really quiet, and I was much. And then it's something that really developed in the last, three, 4 years.
Yeah, it's interesting that how sort of the bloodlines or the energy of our parents can sort of influence us in ways. I don't know, for myself, I know that at times, like, some of the things I see coming through, I have a conversation with my mom, I'm like, oh, that's where some, like, that's where that aspect came from. Like, cool. It's amazing. So it's interesting you say about, like, sort of moving away from that institution. And I know we've had some really interesting conversations about sort of about Jesus and about the biblical Jesus versus kind of what we perceive as the Christ consciousness or the energy that was really behind him. I was actually thinking about this yesterday on my drive home. I don't know why I was thinking about this particular thing, but I had this, because I think I, like, touched my beard or something, and I thought how people have, like, this perception of beards, especially now they're, like, cool again, but at one point it's like, oh, this dirty hippie with a beard and long hair. And I saw those same people are the people who are like, you know, oh, but Jesus is amazing, but he was this, like, long-haired Middle Eastern hippie, like, with a beard, saying, like, love everyone. So I guess I'm curious, like, how it's like, what took you from the institution? What was that breaking point? Was there a moment where you kind of went, hang on, this is a bit weird? And then was there anything sort of literature or anything that helped you to come into a new or altered or, in your perception, improved relationship with Jesus or with that institution or with kind of spirituality in general?
That's a great question. Thank you for asking. let me try to break it down. I started questioning some stuff in the church, in the institution, in the, let's say, in the Bible as a book, not as the core message. But I remember thinking, if I don't agree with a lot of these things, how can I call myself a Christian? I can't just reject what I don't like and just keep what I like. That seems. And then when I was 18, and I was already going through, you know, all these doubts and questions, my cousin came out to our family as gay. And I remember that I was a little bit shocked just because I had no idea. But it, of course, it changed nothing. I was really proud of her. And then both my family, who's not Catholic, is like Christian, Protestant, let's say, non-denominational, ideally. And her family was Roman Catholic. They were devastated, especially her family. And it was something, my uncle, before meeting my aunt, he was about to become a Catholic priest. So, like, proper, like, hardcore Catholic. And I remember thinking, how can an unconditionally loving God judge my cousin today because, you know, she is who she is? And I never believed that God actually would, or that religious God would, but the fact that the followers of this God would say, well, yesterday you were fine, but today you're going to
Yeah, forever.
Of course, I'm making it simple, but there were all these things that just didn't add up. The message of love and the message of forgiveness, but then all these other little things that you had to do for this guy. I don't know, it just doesn't. I think our generation, or the younger generation, I think splits in two, generally speaking. Those who are actively seeking some sort of clarity and answers, and those who are just completely detached, like they just don't care. There's no whereas maybe before it was kind of in the middle, in between, at least in Italy, where people would say, yeah, I'm a Catholic or I'm this, but there wasn't really, it's kind of like, yeah, I'm in between, I kind of believe but I don't believe. And now I think there's this sort of, you know, schism, is that a word in English too?
Yeah, I feel like it is.
But yeah, for me it was just general doubts growing up. And then this particular thing made me, I remember me and my family, like, having this big discussions about how could God possibly you know, be like that. And then I had some time later, I went to California and I had my heart broken in a million pieces because of this girl. And, you know, when you're completely heartbroken, you're really vulnerable and open. And this book called Conversations with God came in my possession. And reading the book really opened my eyes to a lot of things, because it didn't feel like I was learning something new, but I was being reminded of something that I already knew. Mm. And that's when I started, you know, distinguishing between acquired knowledge and the truth that gets awakened by a sentence or a scene or a quote, I don't know. So it was many, many things playing their role in kind of directing me more towards myself or a deeper understanding of spirituality.
Mm. Beautiful. It's interesting that last piece you said there, really, like, I felt like I got proper tingles and goosebumps, like, just like, because I so resonate with that statement of the things that it feels like we're not learning something new, but being reminded of what we already deeply know. And I believe that so strongly is an important sort of signpost along the way for any individual, like, as a way to, when it's not about your conditioning, it's not about what you've been taught is right or wrong, but that's something when it connects with you in a way that feels so inclusive and warm and like, oh yeah, I know this. And I had that, for me, it was one of the books which did that, was one of the experiences was reading The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. When I read that book, and it's just like talking about the heart, the way the heart speaks to us and how every process that we go through, even if we're not sure of it in the moment, is a part of that greater journey. And sometimes you have to go really far to end back where you started. And there's like this whole, and as I was reading it, I just felt this like, oh, I know this so well. Yeah. Like, this is completely familiar.
Something inside of you goes like, hallelujah. Yeah.
exactly. So you came out of that very obviously religious background and then had this awakening just from your own perception, by the sound of it, really from like that part of you that wants to understand things a little more deeply. And then you came through and then you became a singer-songwriter, troubadour, nomad, traveling around the world telling stories. Like, when did you pick up a guitar? Why did you pick up a guitar? And what was the initial motivation for writing songs?
I picked up a guitar for the first time when I was 19 or 20. Growing up in high school, I had a really good friend who was an amazing classical guitar player, and I was always really fascinated by it. But I tried a couple times, and it sounded terrible, so I immediately gave it up. And I remember it was the summer of 2008, and I dropped out of my first university because I went to university. I was studying Chinese and Spanish and crazy stuff, and I was like, no, this is not going to work. And so I had the whole summer. I didn't know what I was doing. I was a little bit lost. So I called a friend and said, can I borrow your guitar? And he gave me like the shittiest guitar to date. Like, it was the worst classical guitar I've ever seen. But I had time. So I started teaching myself, listening to like mostly American singer-songwriters like John Mayer, Jason Mraz, Jack Johnson, that kind of like simple one man, one guitar. And then I think it was just that I really, really enjoyed it. Growing up, I never had a dream of being a musician. So it was quite new for me. And I was I remember doing it almost obsessively. I remember I would come home from university and I wouldn't even take off my shoes and jacket, and I would go straight into my room, sit on my bed and start playing. And then I think it was just because I was seeing this girl that I started writing songs, just, you know, as long songs you can imagine. and then yeah, it was just that I really enjoyed it, and I kept thinking, why would I choose to live my life doing something that I don't like and that I don't really care about, where I could do something that I actually enjoy. And so it was a little bit of this desire, a little bit of passion, a little bit of craziness, a little bit of rebellion, a little bit of just many. I never accepted the status quo. I always had issues with authority, people telling me, this is how it is, this is how the world goes, and this is where you need it. I was like, I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, no, I relate to you on that. Can you hear the hammering in the background? Is that disturbing?
No, not at all.
Oh, that's good. Hopefully it's, anyway, if it comes through, it comes through. Stuff it. But yeah, I really, it's interesting because I, so again, I mean, I imagine that's the situation for so many people who are sort of dream followers, like dream seekers, dream chasers, you know, dream surfers, like where I imagine there would be a very similar theme. And I'd be interested to ask other people in similar situations of that thing of like not just accepting things as they are just because we're told that it's that way. Whereas I think a lot of people do accept it. And I feel like that provides a lot of security for some people. I remember one relatively recently, a friend of mine asked me, he's like, so you don't believe in God as in this like dude sitting up like this specific entity and then heaven. And I was like, no, I don't. That's not, spirituality to me is a much more of a conversation. It's much more of an interactive, integrated experience. And he was like, well, that's terrifying. He's like that. For me, I just know that he's got my back and that I'm going to die and go to heaven and like everything's sorted and it's all good. Like I've got, you know, everything's, and I was like, wow, that sounds really reassuring. Like, and I understand that, like, so that's on like the one spiritual level, but then on the practical, it's the same thing at school when people would say, I remember getting in a lot of trouble at school initially because the teachers would say, you need to learn this thing or you need to know these dates or this is the truth. And I'd say, but why? Like, oh, I don't know if I do want to. And they're like, because I tell you so. And I'm like, well, that's not a valid reason. Like it's not. And then I'd get detention. And so like I learned from a young age that there's like, they don't want you to ask more questions. They just want you to answer things the way they think they need to be answered. And so it's interesting to hear you say how that was always a thing for you of like, no, but I want to. And I think that makes us appear a bit cheeky and like even rude at times, like because but it's really just curiosity, actually, I think, anyway.
And you know it's really funny, actually. I remember growing up, mostly my dad and my mom too, like they always told me, you know, the classic, you know, follow your dreams and and we gave you wings, now you spread those wings and fly, all these things. And then when I started doing it, they freaked out. My dad literally wrote me a letter when I was born saying all these things that a father wants to say to his son, which I read when I was older. And it was the most beautiful, inspiring, you know, uplifting and encouraging. And then when I actually acted upon those dreams, it was like, well, but can you not just get a job in Rome, not leave? So even it's funny because it's scary for so many reasons. It's scary for you to take that leap. Mm. It's scary for those who have encouraged you to take that leap because it is a crazy world. And a lot of people don't either know how to make it or they have the possibility to actually act upon those dreams. Like so much can go wrong along the way. Mm. But I think we both agree, and we've had this conversation before, that we got to where we are because of other people, because of community. Definitely because of all the, you know, what we've done and what, like, our sweat and blood. But I know I wouldn't be where I am today if it wasn't for the incredible people in the community that we found, and that's so supportive and so loving. And I think that's the one key element. If you were to ask me, what's the one thing that made all the difference in the world, is other people, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I so agree with that. I mean, I think this is a really good opportunity to actually play one of your songs. But I do want to respond to that in terms of, I was speaking about this with someone recently in terms of the general music industry, or just general, that the rock star persona. And I look out and I see a lot of artists who are very successful financially and with huge fan bases, as they'll call them, and this whole thing. And yet there's this, when I see them on stage, they're putting on an act. It's more a play than a connective experience. And because what they've forgotten, it seems to me, is that they are only on that stage because of the people in the audience. There's not some mysterious special thing that's put them on the stage. They're on the stage because they're on that stage in that moment because that group of people is there going, we want to hear you play music. And that's huge. And it's like, so with the community of the people who listen to my music specifically, I really get that. And then on the sort of more personal level, yeah, like us connecting as friends, like I definitely felt a lot of aloneness in that feeling of what you were talking about earlier, of like asking all these questions and being a sensitive, vulnerable, compassionate, empathetic, like caring human being. But then around me were these examples that just really weren't reflecting that at school. Like where it's like I was wanting to be this, but then people go, "You're weird." Like this is, and then you know, get teased or bullied or like, and so finding this community of friends now all over the world was just like, this is like, it was like permission, although I was doing it anyway, but it still is good to know that I'm not alone, that we're not alone, that like, that is that, that the other people actually, and I've seen that on a very deep level, as I'm sure you have, in ways as well. It's like with Patreon and with patrons, those people are like, I get to see every day other super caring, super lovely people connecting with each other in authentic ways, which is amazing. Anyway, but I do want to hear one of your songs, and I feel like, I don't know which one, if you have a preference of what you'd like to listen to first, but I kind of figured People of the Sun, in terms of the community, like talking about people coming together. I really, I love that
one. Yeah.
So tell us, tell us a little, just a little intro to the song in terms of maybe where you wrote it or why you wrote it or what was going on at the time. And then.
Yeah. The People of the Sun is definitely about people coming together and community and working together, but it was specifically inspired by the conflict in Syria. I was in Tenerife, little island, Canary Islands off the coast of Morocco with like our lovely crew, our lovely tribe. And we were in paradise and we heard that England had declared war to Syria, which I thought it was insane. Like, how? What? We're declaring war to people in 2016. That doesn't make any sense. And yeah, I just felt very angry and guilty, like as if I had done that, you know. And I felt just a lot of rage and because I was, I just channeled that through. Like it became a song. So it was about, let's not fight, please. Let's all. This is pointless. Let's all work together. So People of the Sun, it was just a way to say everyone. And I remember it was also inspired, co-inspired by a graffiti that I saw when I was 14.
Whoa.
And I was going to pick up my first girlfriend, and it was this huge graffiti that said in Italian, "War will never give you peace," which then became part of the chorus. I translated it, it became part of the chorus. And of course when you're 14, I was like, I read it and I remembered it more visually than because of the meaning. And then somehow that thing came back, what, like 12 years later, 13 years later, and I made it into a song. So yeah, People of the Sun, "War will never give you peace, let's all be friends."
So many pages written for the reunification of the people of the sun. I say war will never give you peace. Listen to the trees and the birds and the breeze and the words of the sages. Oh, so many pages written for the reunification of the people of the sun. Na-na-na-na. People of the sun, oh. You don't have to take my word, but you see history repeats and the pieces come together when you open your eyes to see that the seed and the lies, it's been storylines. Time has come to realize the devil comes in suits and ties. I push shame for the way that we live in. I find a heart that's just a puppet saying what to believe in, cause what I'm feeling is the pain the man is causing for profit as we keep killing one another over paper and profits. Now we're standing tall, say not in my name. This is my home, this is my people. We're one and the same war will never give you peace. Listen to the trees and the birds and the breeze and the words of the sages. Oh, so many pages written for the reunification of the people of the sun. I say war will never give you peace. Listen to the trees and the birds and the breeze and the words of the sages. Oh, so many pages written for the reunification of the people of the sun. And I know your people will rise over the hatred, conscious and sacred, lovers of life, seekers of truth, the proof that the seed of the change that we seek is inside of you. I say the only solution to the spiritual pollution is the people unifying in a peaceful revolution. Now the only solution to the spiritual pollution, people unifying in a peaceful revolution. Now the only solution to the spiritual pollution is the people unifying in a peaceful revolution. Now the only solution is love, love, cause what we need is love.
We've just technically listened to the song.
Really
bad. Yeah. I was like so fast. I don't know if anyone got it, but it happened. So again,
our rhymes.
Was that? Yeah. What was that?
I said, that's how fast I spit my rhymes.
Right, exactly. Like literally the five, it was 0.03 of a second. If you weren't listening, sorry, you missed it. But yeah, the thing, like, cause I'm still working on how to edit these things together. So Ricardo and I are having a conversation and then I'm editing in everything after. So I'm interested to see how that turns out. That song, I mean, it's one of my favorite of your songs for sure. And I love the line, that line that you spoke of, war will never bring you peace. And I just, it's something I think about a lot, and I don't really have a complete answer because I look at someone like, I know he's like the example, everyone, it's like the biggest example of a tyrant ever, but in terms of Hitler and what he did, and my question is like, what if people had just sat back and gone, well, war will never bring us peace, so we can't, it's not like, let's just chill, and then what would have happened? And that's, I'm curious to know, like, do you wonder about those kind of things and how do we live that every day when it's, you know, I believe it and I say it, but at the same time, there are certain things that I would feel very firmly I needed to defend if it came to that. And I just wonder what your thoughts are.
I think about a line from Nacho Bear, one of his songs, where he says, I will learn to be peaceful, but I'll keep my knife in my side.
Mm-hmm.
it's a good question. And I think about it a lot. I think if we take war will never give you peace in the context of actual war, or aggression,
mm.
or some sort of attack, physical or towards freedom or towards rights. I don't know. I don't know. Coming from an experience in America where with Standing Rock, where the native tribes of North America were trying to protect their land from a giant oil company, you know, physically abusing them, trying to take them away from their land so they could build a pipeline. And the protest that people, thousands of people from the world joined was completely peaceful. It was about prayer. It was about forgiveness. It was about, you know, it was very, very spiritual experience. And it was the most powerful thing I ever experienced. But sometimes I couldn't understand how they could stay peaceful in the face of, aggression. And now, like, well, last week they were evicted and they're building the pipeline anyway. So in a way, you could think, oh, you know, we failed, we lost. But what that kind of peaceful approach triggered was, I think, a lot bigger than saving that little piece of land. So I don't know. Ideally, we would always avoid conflict. But that sentence, I started applying also to everyday life in a much more like personal and simple way. War taken as conflict, war taken as opposing something or resisting something from a moral, emotional, spiritual point of view, like that really will never bring us peace. Like earlier, before we started recording, I was telling you how the past 2 weeks I've been really, really down for, you know, some personal stuff and waiting for an answer. And I've been really worried. I've been really sad. I've been borderline miserable. And you know, knowing that that kind of suffering comes from resisting rather than accepting completely, this is how it is. And, you know, what I can do, I will do, but I can't do anything to, you know, change this right now. So in that sense, war, conflict, resisting, and that, it was not giving me any peace. And I was praying for peace first, like before getting what I want. I was praying for that kind of, like, whatever happens, I don't want to experience this way, because I'm not doing myself any favor by being so uptight and so mad. So there's so many ways we could look at it. And so maybe it's easier on an individual personal level. On a bigger scale, I don't know. Sometimes we do need to fight, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I feel like you've landed on so many of the things that I've also thought about it in terms of, on the personal level, because we only really have control of the personal, and for each of us as individuals, and that's where the strength and the power of each of us lives. And I really hear you when you say that conflict, the war will never bring us peace. That's also within ourselves, and that's kind of where everything begins and ends as far as each of our individual realities go. So I totally hear you on that one. I mean, it's so challenging then to look outward and see all the war and the conflict and be like, well, what do I do to be a part of this in a positive way? I guess that's often what meditation is. What they're talking about is to observe the reality as it is, and to just then, by that witnessing, you give yourself more of an opportunity to respond in a balanced way. So I hear you on that one. Absolutely. So I'm actually interested. I feel like we should listen to your song, because you wrote Spirit on Our Side after that, right? Like, I don't know if it was at Standing Rock or after, but maybe just a little more of like, just what initially drew you there as a sort of Italian musician who happened to be visiting the States? Like, what drew you to a Native American defense of their land, a peaceful defense of their land? And then what did your perception change once you were there? And then how, you know, where did the song kind of come out of in you? And what is your sort of hope for with that song?
Another great question.
Thanks. I'm just like curious. I want to know.
I'm glad. The simple question is that life dragged me to Standing Rock. I went to California for pleasure, for see friends, travel, play some music. And the friend I was staying with, she's She's deeply involved with Native American tribes. She's part of an organization called the Morning Star Foundation, where they, you know, protect and promote the Native wisdom. And so I knew already about Standing Rock a little bit, but when I got there, it was all we talked about. It was all Standing Rock. Every day she'd be on the phone with elders on the camp, and she would tell me things. She would show me videos, and I really started feeling this, and it was quite hard. And then two dear friends of ours, Miriam and Naomi, they were also in California, and they already knew, like, we're going. And I remember thinking, oh, shit. Like, if everyone goes, then I have to go.
So much effort.
And it's cold, and people getting beaten up. Like, a little bit was me being lazy. A little bit was actually dangerous, because people were being arrested and getting beaten up and maced and putting in, like, dog cages. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so I fought that internally for a while, thinking, no, it's not for me. I can't. And then... But then there was a part of me that knew, like, you have to go. Like, you can't talk about peace and coming together and, you know, all this beautiful stuff if then you're presented with the opportunity to do something and you don't. Like, how can you stand on a stage ever again? And, so we went and we drove from L.A. about 30 hours. We got to Standing Rock. And to answer your question, did it change your perception? 100,000,000%. because I'd only met Native Americans, I think, when I was in the Grand Canyon, and I didn't meet them. Like, they were just there as part of the attraction, I guess. But what you know about Native Americans, what I knew about Native Americans was what? Documentaries and stories and movies, some books. And then when I got there, it was really powerful. Beside the fact that they're, you know, Native Americans, in a way, they're just other people from another part of the world that kind of look just like you. it was their approach to something that I don't know how we would have dealt with as Western white people, because you really feel the difference of culture and where you're coming from, and in a way you feel this racism, but not in a I don't know how to say, maybe not racism, but all your concepts, all your ideas of what it means to be white and what it means to not be white. And I remember showing up with this idea. I didn't even know I felt it, but then I realized, oh, look at this white mentality of we're here to save the day, we got you.
Wow.
Which I didn't even know I had. And then you get there and these, you know, Native elders will tell you, well, first of all, you need to shut up and listen, because we have our ways and we've been fighting this battle for 500 years. And then you think, wow, I never consider that. Just to see, I went over Thanksgiving weekend and there were, I don't know, like 10,000 people. It was ridiculous. And to see most of those people working together in the snow, doing, you know, prayerful and peaceful actions, and like just to see the utopia in a way of a lot of people working together without one leader, just for the common good, fighting, you know, the same battle. It was incredible. Everyone had a role, everyone could contribute something, and it really, yeah, there's a lot of wisdom. There's so much incredible wisdom in that culture and part of the world, the way they perceive themselves as just part of everything, which is what you see in the East and you see in the West. And we kind of lost it here in the middle, you know. But it's not something they know because it's ancient wisdom. It's something they live and embody. So everything you do, there's some sort of offering to spirit or God or nature. And you acknowledge, even for example, they acknowledge the four directions when they do a prayer. They don't pray up or down. They it's everywhere. And it was really, really powerful. So the song I wrote before I went to Standing Rock, not really knowing what I was writing about. I remember watching videos of people getting beaten up, and the line, "They can beat us, but they cannot defeat us," started playing in my head. Remember, I was smoking and I couldn't even sing because I had a throat infection that first week I was in L.A. So just this line, "They can beat us, but they cannot defeat us," started going around. And then I started playing with some rhymes, and then... And then, yeah, like as inspiration, like inspiration happens, or like it started coming out, and then, yeah, spirit on our side, as in we're not fighting the battle alone. We're not just a bunch of people camping in a, you know, in North Dakota, but there's something much bigger happening. And then when I went there, I understood what I wrote about. So when I came back to LA, I kind of knew a little bit better what kind of message I was bringing, and it's now one of my favorite songs, really.
Yeah, it's interesting because when we were sort of chatting earlier about doing this podcast conversation, I went and looked up the video again, and what I got from watching it was the depth of your emotion in it. Like, I really felt you present in a very, I don't know, I just noticed it. I was like, he knows what he's talking about right now. Like, that's what he's saying is not just like, I'm just singing a song. It's like, here we go, medicine. And, you know, whatever.
I was really lucky because the beautiful people I recorded with, I played a gig in this, I think it was a vegan ice cream shop in LA. And this man, the husband of a friend, this man came to me and said, "This song is amazing. We need to record it. I may know some people." And then he hooked me up with these people that I'd never met. And I remember driving up to the studio, I kept thinking, I hope that we resonate, that they don't want to just record a song, but they understand. And I got to this little studio, and there was these three men standing in front of the door, and you had to kind of walk up these stairs. And they had the most beautiful smiles, like they were just radiating. And I walked in, and there were all these like photos of Native Americans. One of the guys had a whole bunch of Native American flutes, and the first thing they said was like, "We're fully on board with this. Like, we love the song. We love what you're doing. We just want to make sure that it reaches as many people as possible." So to work in that kind of environment where before we recorded, we talked about it, we prayed, we burned some sage, and we really got into the. It wasn't just me in a studio singing. It felt like it was something happening with all of us.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, let's have a listen to it. So this is Spirit on Our Side by my main man, Roman. And I'm sure that you will find whatever you need to find within it. Enjoy.
This is for this guy. Water and the trees. This is for the peaceful fighting on their knees. This is for the stone cold heart of the oppressor. This is for the old soul breathing under pressure. This is for the wisdom and the struggle of my tribe. This is for the hopes and the bodies on the line. This is for the greedy, the foolish and the blind. This is for the truth that is blossoming inside. Take a stand for this land where there's the life in this soil. Cause I refuse to sit and watch my mother drowning in oil. As the corrupted politicians hold the silence with violence, we raise our voices as we rise to form a sacred alliance. So they can beat us, but they cannot defeat us. The people of this land are the roots that grow beneath us, standing taller than the mountains, chanting down the sky with the colors of the rainbow. Spirit on our side. We got 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 spirit on our side in the change that we seek. Spirit on our side in the words that we speak. Spirit on our side in the love that we give. Spirit on our side when we choose to forgive. Spirit on our side in the pain that we feel. Spirit on our side in the wounds that we heal. Spirit on our side in His infinite grace. Spirit on our side here in this place. Spirit on our side. We got spirit on our side. We got spirit on our side. Great spirits on our side. Now we need warriors to rise, warriors unite, coming together to pray. May them open their eyes, they know not. Perhaps the purpose of the struggle is to bring us together, to wake us up from the illusion, cause we're in this together. The time has come for us to think about the source of our power, cause only water turns a seed into a beautiful flower. Now take a minute, listen to the wind and reflect. This planet is our only home and we will show respect. Nobody's gonna come and save us once the damage is done. No wicked uniform can stop us when we stand up as one. So they can beat us, but they cannot defeat us. The people of this land are the roots that grow beneath us, standing taller than the mountains, chanting down the sky with the colors of the rainbow, spirit on our side. So they can beat us, but they cannot defeat us. The people of this land are the roots that grow beneath us, standing taller than the mountains, chanting down the sky with the colors of the rainbow, spirit on our side. We got 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 spirit on our side in the change that we seek. Spirit on our side in the words that we speak. Spirit on our side in the love that we give. Spirit on our side when we choose to forgive. Spirit on our side in the pain that we feel. Spirit on our side in the wounds that we heal. Spirit on our side in His infinite grace. Spirit on our side here in this place. Spirit on our side. We got spirit on our side. We got spirit on our side. Great spirits on our side.
Enjoyed and listened to, which feels so strange because this is like 3 seconds after I finished saying the last thing I said, but like 4 minutes ago in whoever's listening time. Weird. Anyway, so yeah, that was Spirit on Our Side. I would really recommend checking out the YouTube video. I will put a link to that in the description of this podcast, so you can also go and have a watch. I think that also helps to connect to the visual aspect of it. I don't really have much more I want to talk about. I'm kind of just happy to be connecting. Yeah, for those who don't know, I'll probably talk about this a bit in the intro as well, but just that Ricardo and I are part of a collective of family, really like chosen family. I was thinking about this recently about how we choose, like the soul friends for me are the family I've chosen. And I think that that's a profound thing. And so we're part of this collective called the Lyrical Nomads and a much broader circle of incredible friends and healers and kind people all over the world. And so it's just really lovely always to catch up. Do you know Thomas is, I'm going to be seeing Thomas in a few days, hopefully.
He's coming.
He's coming. Anyway, so yes, is there, I really do also want to invite and encourage people, whoever's listening right now, to go and check out your stuff. So I will have links to your YouTube and all the rest, and also your Patreon. I guess most of the people listening will know about Patreon, either being my patrons or just having an idea about it. But in brief, it's a website where people can go and support the artists they love, pledging either a tiny or a huge amount or anything in between on a monthly basis or per creation. Very simple to do, very easy to pledge, to unpledge, to raise, pledge low, whatever you need to do. And it's really enabling artists like Roman and myself and the crew that we roam with to stay independent, stay free, stay real. And so I'll have a link to his Patreon in there, and I so invite you to go and pledge and become a part of that community.
Yes, please.
Yeah, man. And so I guess, is there anything else that you're feeling that you wanted to speak about in this moment? I mean, I feel like we've covered some good ground.
I want to talk about, I don't know, I want to talk about what we're going to do when we're together again, hopefully soon.
I know, I was thinking about that too. Like I loved your idea of making like a collaborative EP. That sounds like so much fun. And then I'm certainly excited. I'm also recording my next album in August, which we'll all be around. And I want you guys as involved as possible. And then also a Lyrical Nomads reunion gig in London town. So that'll all be like late August, early September. I'm so excited about all of that. I think.
How about I'm going to just say it, exclusive on Nate Mangard's podcast. What if instead of organizing a show, a gig, so booking a venue, promoting it, playing, hugging people, and going, we organized basically a Lyrical Nomads Chestival edition kind of thing. So a weekend, so it doesn't have, it doesn't need to have like hot air balloons, and smoothies and fireworks, but if we could find just a lovely place, which could be Green Camp or it could be Lulu's Land, or I don't know.
Yeah.
And just have a weekend of camping and playing and really connecting. Because, I mean, a show is amazing, but it's so short. The time you realize so you're in it, it's done.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so in. What I would say is the first intention I would like to set around that is finding someone who wants to be like the main organizer, who could like, that we can all be involved, but that we have someone who can like do the practicalities, because then we can just flow in an easier way. But I think that's such a great idea. Like really, I mean, I agree. That's the thing, because there's I think 8 Lyrical Nomads now, 7. I mean, it's there's a lot of us. Yeah. So like we can't really technically do a show anymore. We have to do a festival.
Yeah, there's a few of us, and we could have like, we have, you know, friends that could teach yoga. We could have cacao ceremonies. We could have we would just tell our community like, we want to do this, but it doesn't have to be our thing, like a Lyrical Nomad. Just we want to be together and we'll share our music. We'll play like, I don't know, 2-3 shows a day or so, just us together. I don't know.
I'm keen.
And just chat and communicate and cuddle so much.
So much cuddling. You heard it here first, people of the interwebs. The Lyrical Nomads and Friends coming to you live from the countryside of England.
Love that.
Cool, brother. Well, thank you so much. I mean, we're going to lead out on Free at Last, which is just absolutely one of the coolest songs in the world. So thank you so much for taking the time to join me on this and to actually experiment with me, as this is like the first ever podcast interviewee conversing thing I've done, and I'm
loved it.
Okay, good. I'm so glad. And yes, are there any other links you'd like to share specifically where people can find your stuff? I will share them in the notes anyway, but.
Well, just the easiest thing is to go on my website, romanmusic.com. That's where there's all the links, all the new stuff, and then just choose what like the most.
Excellent. And so tell us before we kind of bring it to a close, what is Free at Last? Like, what is the vibe? Tell us the story.
Okay. Free at Last is basically a song of celebration. Just pure. Imagine like a gospel vibe. And again, it's a song that when I wrote, I didn't really know what I was writing about. I mean, it takes time to fully digest a song like that, or People of the Sun, but it's just a song about celebration and acknowledging that we're so much more than our limited physical form, and that there's so much more. And inspired also by Bob Marley's Emancipate Yourself from Mental Slavery. We create most of our boundaries and most of our limitations are created in the mind. And the moment you free yourself from it, then maybe you're not completely free, but you're definitely a little bit more free than before.
Nice.
Pretty much.
Well, that's it. Thank you so much to everyone for listening. Thank you, Roman, Ricardo, my brother, my friend. Thank you for joining us on this. It's been so much fun, and I can't wait to share this with the world and see what people think and connect more people with your beautiful vibes. So yeah, if anybody does love what we've spoken about, please get in touch with myself or Ricardo on the links that we've sent and have conversations, because we're both very much questioning people. Nothing that we've spoken is set in stone. It's all really a free flow experience of life. So I love having conversations about these kind of things with people. So please do ask myself. And I know that Ricardo feels the same. I don't even have to check in about that one. And that's it. Please connect further and enjoy his beautiful song, Free at Last. And thank you for being here. We'll see you again real soon.
I am free. found that everything I needed was to look inside, past the fast speed pace of this human race, in the place where love lays, embrace its grace. And now I wanna feel the sun on my face as I praise the Most High, feel it more than alive, so free yourself from the chains of material ways and give along. And don't worry about tomorrow, think about the sorrow you feel when you forget it, just the body that you borrow. Don't wake up, cause the dream won't last. Nothing ever happens in the future or past. Take a vow to come back to the now. The fire is burning, life unfolding, keep on holding on. Brother, stay strong, sister, don't cry, keep your head high. Cause I said I hope, I was lost but now I'm whole. Blind, but now I see. I was captive, now I'm free. Hallelujah. I said, I hope. I was lost, but now I'm whole. I was blind, but now I see. I was captive, now I'm free. I'm free and less. Free and less. Well, I am free and less. I am free. Beyond longing and grief, no longer wrapped in belief, I took a peek behind the veil and I was sighing relief. For I can see when my eyes close, light glows. When you got love, everything flows. So don't identify yourself with the voice in your head. You fight beyond the limitations that are driving you mad. You gotta realize the self, open up the door and let go. Oh, don't worry about tomorrow, think about the sorrow you feel when you forget it. It's the body that you borrow. Cause the dream won't last. Nothing ever happens in the future or past. Take your vows to come back to the now. The fire is burning, life unfolding, keep on holding on. Brother, stay strong, sister, don't cry. Inside, past the fast beat pace of this human race, in the place where love lays, embrace its grace. And now, who says you need a word away? Who says you need a word at all? Yeah. Who says you need a word away? Who says you need a word at all? Who says you need a word away? Who says you need a word away?
Wait, you're still here? Well, thank you for listening all the way through, beautiful human. If you enjoyed this experience, there will be many more coming. I have so many people I'm excited to speak with and so many things I'm excited to speak about. So please do check it out. Stay connected. This is up on SoundCloud. I'm hoping to add it to iTunes sometime soon. So come on back. It'll be first and always shared on Patreon with my patrons. And you're very welcome to become a patron if you want to support what it is that I'm doing in the world as an artist, as a communicator, and as a facilitator. That would be amazing. To all my patrons, I appreciate every single one of you so much, you beautiful natives. Thank you for being in my world. I will see you again very soon with more from this delightful experience called life. I wish you well. Ciao.